that they had to do something. So Mueller, String, and what do they go after him on? Lying to Congress. I mean, if that's the case, why didn't Mueller ever get convicted and raided? Because he lied to the Congress all the time as FBI director. But I think that what I wrote is that this was a sign that Mueller is going to, even though he has no evidence of anything, he's going to go all out to try and get a conviction and give the Democrats the basis for an impeachment campaign. So we know Mueller. Remember, Mueller also was FBI director. He covered up for the Saudi role in 9/11 and in terrorism. He covered up for his friends at Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corporation, which is a major drug money launderer. Look, these guys are egotists to the extreme. They think they're somehow born. When you talk about an oligarchy, it's people who think they're born to rule, that they're better. And that regardless of who the American people vote for, in this case, Donald Trump, they know better what's in the...
The scientists at LivePet are hard at work solving our cancer epidemic. They have the most promising cancer trials going on now with pet clinics around the country that I have ever seen. You can see the promising cancer research and trials going on some of the past shows that I've done. The links are below. While working with C60 and other ingredients, these talented scientists developed a hair growth serum that really works. They sat on it for years. After all, cancer is their focus. But they now realize how much the profits from this product could really help their cancer research. So the C360 Hair Growth product was launched. C360 Hair Growth is specifically designed to revive your hair growth by targeting hair follicles and restarting your hair growth cycle. C60, the active ingredient in C360 Hair Growth, reactivates hair follicles that have stalled due to hereditary hair loss, physical conditions, or environmental factors that may affect follicle production. You will begin to see visible results using C360 Hair Growth within 3 to 6 weeks. Buy today knowing that your future hair growth will help fund very promising cancer research. See more at the link below.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. This episode, I have Harley Schlanger coming to the show. He is brilliant. I'm so glad that I got introduced to him. He is part of the La Roche pack, and I went and I read his articles, and I wish I would have met him sooner. I've heard of, you know, he was on SGT Report and other big platforms, and I've always been impressed with him. But then I really started digging into his work, and I'm really impressed with his knowledge and his background. And in particular, when he was with the Reagan administration, he did some work with them, and the La Roche, he worked with him as well, and they worked with Mueller. And Mueller went after him. So he has a lot of insight on the tactics of Mueller, and he's just a creep. And he ended up being, they were in court against him, and his case got thrown out for fraud. And he'll explain all that. And his tactics continue for decades. I mean, this guy's not a good guy, and he's lied. The things he's going after people for lying to Congress, he's done that throughout his whole career. And now he's going after people like Roger Stone and arresting him. He's throwing a big signal that you don't mess with me kind of thing. And if anybody needs to be thrown out, it's him. His history is of lies and deceit, and he'll share that with you. And other things, we have a great conversation about geopolitical and also where the United States is at and how we really need to buckle down and rebuild our country and our spirit. Is broken. We're breaking our spirit, and we need to build that and look for solutions. So I wanna encourage you to go to his website. And I have the link down here, and read their information. It's really great stuff. So let's get into my interview now with Harley Schlanger. Harley, thank you so much for joining the program.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm glad we had a chance to meet, even if it's over Skype.
Yeah, well, I've heard so many good things about you and your articles at the La Roche pack is top notch. I mean, it's better than almost anything else I've seen as far as geopolitical analysis and just what's going on. And I'm so glad that you're coming on the show, and I have a lot of questions. And I want to start first with the Roger Stone, how he was brought in. You have a lot of experience with Mueller, and so you're going to have some insights that you're going to be able to share with us, which is fantastic. But the way they brought him in was crazy. And one of the things that I read that you wrote about was that this was a big message that they were sending to anybody that dares to support Trump, that we will take you down and we will treat you this way.
Yeah, this was Roger is somewhat unique in that he's known Trump for 40 years. He actually was one of the architects of the Trump presidential campaign strategy, going back to his experience with the so-called forgotten man, the Nixon policy, the Reagan Morning in America policy. He was from all of that. He brought that to Trump. And he is being attacked by Mueller, supposedly, as a connection to the Russians, to Guccifer, to WikiLeaks, and it's all a fraud. But what they did with Roger was they made so much of his case trying to prove that he was the link to the Russians that they had to do something. So Mueller, string, and what do they go after him on? Lying to Congress. I mean, if that's the case, why didn't Mueller ever get convicted and raided? Because he lied to the Congress all the time as FBI director. So they sent 20-something FBI agents in body armor at dawn, pre-dawn, to bang on his door and to essentially threaten him with the next 25 years in prison. Now, to his credit, Roger's saying, oh, I'll cooperate with Mueller. I'll tell him the truth. There's no collusion. But I think that what I wrote is that this was a sign that Mueller is going to, even though he has no evidence of anything, he's going to go all out to try and get a conviction and give the Democrats the basis for an impeachment campaign. So I think that's the significance of the Stone attack. And also, I think the other side of it is that Roger's going to fight, and he really deserves support.
Well, you had, your group has had personal experience with Mueller, and you can share, I mean, his tactics go back for decades of him doing things that are, a nice way of saying it, unethical, but flat out fraud. Can you explain what your experiences were?
Yeah, the criminal behavior of this guy goes back to the 80s when he first started as a prosecutor. He was brought in on the Get LaRouche task force. I work with Lyndon LaRouche. He was brought in on that task force in the early 1980s when LaRouche was working with Ronald Reagan to meet with Russians to discuss the possibility of sharing the anti-missile defense system that Reagan proposed, the so-called Strategic Defense Initiative. And there was a letter from British intelligence to the FBI in 1983 saying you have to break the relationship between LaRouche and Reagan. Go after LaRouche as, get this, a Russian agent. And so
it's their go-to move.
Yeah, the same thing. And of course, then it was the Soviet Union. So it was even more dangerous what they were alleging. But they tried to say that LaRouche was operating as a Russian agent inside the Reagan administration. And eventually the case moved to Boston, the anti-LaRouche case. And Robert Mueller was the chief prosecutor in the LaRouche case that came to trial in 1988 in Boston. And in it, among the things that he did was he demanded documents from us. And at the time, I was in charge of one of I sent over 600 boxes of documents to the FBI in Boston, which they stuck in a warehouse in Connecticut and told the judge we were defying the order to produce documents. And they were threatening to arrest all of my associates at the time. And when the judge found out that the documents were being hidden, and he also found out that Mueller was hiding evidence of an FBI operation against LaRouche for many, many years, the judge threw out the case. So we know Mueller. Remember, Mueller also was FBI director. He covered up for the Saudi role in 9/11 and in terrorism. He covered up for his friends at Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corporation, which is a major drug money launderer. He covered up one case. The most important thing about him is that former Democratic Senator Bob Graham, who was the head of the 9/11 committee in Congress, accused Mueller of aggressive deception when the Congress was trying to investigate 9/11. So So he has a long record of doing this. I think if you look at the case, the so-called Russiagate case, you see nothing.
Well, yeah, it's so how does somebody with that kind of record stay in Washington this long? Who's backing him? Is this the British government and empire that's trying to keep hold of everything they got, and they're manipulating people behind the scenes? What's really, I mean, how does somebody like this stick around?
Well, you could ask that about a lot of these guys, like John Brennan.
Yeah, I know.
Or Jim Comey. You know, the when we talk about the British Empire, we're not talking about the Queen per se. We're talking about the Privy Council. We're talking about the financial networks of the City of London that are intertwined with the same corporations that are pushing these free trade agreements that are behind the European Union and so on. And they have an intelligence operation, the MI6, the GCHQ, which is the British equivalent of the National Security Agency. And Russiagate started with GCHQ, a man named Hannigan, who was the head of it, going to Brennan in late 2015 saying, we're picking up strange indices of cyber activity from Russia. Brennan then later used that to pull together a task force with Clapper, another guy who lies to Congress all the time, as Snowden showed. Clapper and Brennan then got Comey on board. Now, this is a crew that's whole career has been based on promoting these British intelligence frauds. Remember, people forget this. Who was it that told George Tenet and George W. Bush that it was a slam dunk that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction? That came from Sir Richard Dearlove, the head of MI6. Dearlove is the boss for many, many years of Christopher Steele, who wrote the dossier that was at the heart of the FISA warrants and the Russiagate. So when we're talking about the British, we're talking about names that you can name, people who are specific individuals who worked with people like Brennan, Clapper, Obama, Susan Rice, Samantha Power. These are people who are part of this Anglo-American intelligence elite that in the U.S. are with both the Bush crowd and the Clinton-Obama crowd.
With the world being so crazy, I have two great gift ideas to help you and your family stay safe. First, the Shockwave Torch. This tiny tool drops a 260-pound thug in 2 seconds. It packs so much power in such a small package, it's scary. Thank God it's got a safety on it. If you want to stay safe in a dangerous world, I promise the Shockwave Torch will help. You can also get, as an additional item, this combo pack. It's an ultra-powerful police-grade 18% pepper spray with an ultra-discreet 3-million-volt stun gun. I am getting these for every one of the women in my family. I believe we should all be carrying this for self-defense. And with gun laws becoming stricter than ever, what a great option for women in your family or even men in your family to be safe. With purchase of any other item, you can get this for only $29. So click the links below to find out more information.
Could you, if you wanted to, could we do somebody who is ethical, do a research analysis of the money flow and see that there's money coming from nefarious sources, whether from the City of London, from these corporations, to this group of people? Like, is Mueller getting paid in the background? Because why else would he be doing this?
Power, prestige.
Offshore account.
Prestige. These guys are egotists to the extreme. They think they're somehow born. When you talk about an oligarchy, it's people who think they're born to rule, that they're better. And that regardless of who the American people vote for, in this case, Donald Trump, they know better what's in the interest of the United States in their minds. And of course they make money from it. You know, look at Obama. The guy's a multimillionaire now. Look at Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton. You know, what you could track, and I think it has been tracked, is the money that went to the Clinton campaign that found its way to Fusion GPS, which hired Christopher Steele to do the dossier. So, you know, here we are, we're talking about Russian meddling. That's the whole theme since 2016. What about British meddling? Christopher Steele was the top Russian expert at MI6. He was involved in things such as the Skripal case. He worked with this guy, Pablo Miller, who was Skripal's British controller. So a lot of these crazy things that have happened in the last few years go back to this nexus. Look at the Papadopoulos case around Russiagate. Papadopoulos was met by this guy, Mifsud, supposedly a professor who's actually from Malta, who somewhat mysteriously disappeared. But he was the one who put the story to Papadopoulos of the Russian dirt on Hillary. As Papadopoulos is now saying, he was set up by the FBI. Who else was involved? Alexander Downer, who was the Australian commissioner to the United Kingdom. And Downer was the one who tipped off John McCain. So you had this network of British intelligence operatives, CIA agents, and FBI agents who concocted this completely fallacious story of Russian hacking and Trump collusion. And that's what's been paralyzing this country for the last 2.5 years while we're in the midst of a potentially very dangerous financial blowout and also a strategic situation which is deteriorating because Trump is not able to fulfill what he started, which is to work with the Russians, the Chinese, and others to calm down the strategic situation. If he talks to Putin, they say it proves he's an agent of Putin.
Well, and that's on purpose, right? The British, and that's one of the things I saw you read, is that the British is doing this strategically on purpose to maintain their empire, and they're behind all this. Nobody ever talks about the British. The media is worthless. I mean, it's incredible how bad they are. But nobody's talking about the British truly being behind this.
The media is a psychological warfare operation. But if you actually look at where a lot of these stories originate, you find them in the Financial Times and the Guardian of London, which used to be considered a socialist publication. They're feeding a lot of this material then to the New York Times, to the Washington Post. Of course, the Times and the Post, what are they? They're part of the cabal. They're part of the old geopolitical geometry. What we've identified, what I write about extensively, is that this cabal is protecting a bankrupt financial system. They're the ones behind the euro and the European Central Bank. They're the ones through the money center banks in New York that control the Federal Reserve System. And what they did in the run-up to 2008 in creating a debt crisis with over-leverage, with no real equity under... They've almost doubled that since 2008. There's a 60% increase in public and private debt since 2008. Now, what have the banks done? They've gotten free money from the Federal Reserve, from the Bank of England, from the European Central Bank. Did they use that money to invest in industry and manufacturing and research and development? No. They bought their own stocks back. They posted it on in the vault at the Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank to back up their derivative obligations in case that domino should start to fall. So we've had a huge buildup of debt. And what they're most terrified of is, number one, that people will understand that the people who should have been prosecuted for 2008 were not only given a get-out-of-jail-free card, but given a huge pile of money backed by what? Backed by the American people, even though we have no stake in these banks. Secondly, there's a new system that's emerging, which we could be a part of. What the Chinese are doing, what the Japanese are doing, the Indians are doing, they're investing in physical production. They're extending credit, but not to back up bad paper. You know, the U.S. is functioning under the Federal Reserve like someone who pays off a mortgage on a credit card. It doesn't solve your debt problem. The Chinese and others are creating debt, but it's going into building things that produce wealth. And Trump is interested in that. Trump is a builder. He's a contractor. He understands production. He doesn't fully understand, I don't think, the intricacies of the London banks and so on, but he doesn't really like speculation. We've got to get the U.S. to break with this policy of London, of the offshore banking, the tax havens, the funny money, the derivative and swaptions and options and so on, and get back to good old American physical economy, investment in the future in goods producing and scientific research, goods production and scientific research. If we do that, we'll be okay. But that would mean a lot of people would not only be bankrupted among these elite, some of them would go to jail. They should have gone to jail. They were protected by Obama and Loretta Lynch and Eric.
A lot of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we need to get back to doing smart investing in ourselves, just basic business development, country development. And we are in a situation where we're making our people sick and then keeping the true scientific discoveries at bay so that we can't help the people that are sick. I mean, we got this just really terrible system going on. And we're being pushed down in every area from a scientific development. I talk to scientists all the time, and they are doing things in stealth mode so that they can help people and they can get things going. And their hands are tied behind their back on a continuous basis. And without solving that, because in China and the other place, everybody's like, we got to go to China, or we got to go to Mexico so we can actually do trials and we can get this going. Is it that these other countries realize that? I mean, that's a huge strategic advantage.
Of course it is. But let me give you an example of what's going on in the West, the so-called green policy. Even before Ocasio-Cortez's Green New Deal, you have absolute insanity on energy policy. I live in Germany now. Germany is an economy that's based on machine tool production, engineering efficiency, science and technology. Germany has an exit from nuclear power. They're now trying to shut down coal-produced electricity. By 2035, Merkel is saying Germany should no longer use coal. Well, coal is a huge part of German electricity. They're now even talking about shutting down whole sectors of the auto industry, called emission problems, based on one report which has been challenged about diesels producing particulate matter that causes health problems in the... there's no evidence for it. Then you take the bigger picture, the so-called man-made climate change. Climate changes all the time. We had climate change, hot and cold periods before there was a single person on the planet, before there was a single steam engine, before there was a factory. Part of the relationship of the Earth in the solar system to the sun and to our solar system to other solar systems, something much bigger than too many cars and too many factories. But they've used this fake science to impose austerity, shutdown of energy production. And the people behind this go back to these same British banks that we were talking about earlier, or London-centered banks. Who started the environmental movement in the United States? It was the Rockefellers. They funded the World Population Council. They funded studies like Small is Beautiful, E.F. Schumacher, people like that. And they're the ones who are trying to get us out of technology. When Obama went to Africa, and the Africans were hopeful he would talk to them about how they could develop a continent, he said, look, you guys can't have an American standard of living, because if you do, the planet will boil over. That's a complete fraud. So you mentioned the scientific frauds. That's what's dominating policy. And now we're seeing the Democrats, some of them more sensitive, roped into this Green New Deal nonsense. What's that going to do for the people who still have jobs in factories? They're going to be out of work. Their plants are going to be shut down, and we're going to be buying the goods produced in China, Thailand, maybe even Honduras and Brazil.
Well, people think, and it makes sense, that they're purposely destroying the United States by making it impossible for us to advance, making it impossible for us to, you know, get anything done, while that money is being invested in the East, where they are doing advancement and doing great things.
Well, and that's the whole point. You see people in the Congress ranting and raving about Huawei, the telecom conglomerate. They actually may have 15 years ago stolen some U.S. technology, which they've sort of admitted. But now they've developed their own new technology. Meanwhile, we can't replicate it yet. And so what do? We accuse them of violating sanctions, intellectual property acts, things of that sort, to attack their advances. You look at space. China right now has a rover on the far side of the moon. We haven't been on the moon for a long time. Why not work with China? Well, the FBI will arrest American scientists if they talk to Chinese scientists because of the Frank Wolf Act, which said the United States should not talk to China because they'll steal our secrets. I got news for you. Not only did that already happen, but maybe we should steal some of their secrets because they're moving ahead. But under this fake science climate and this whole idea that there are too many people on the earth and there's too much industry, the United States is being turned into a backward feudal economy where we're losing the middle class. More and more people are going into poverty. And a very tiny number of people like Jeff Bezos control virtually everything. Now, that's not progress. And I think what we're trying to do with LaRouche PAC, one of the reasons we're defending President Trump, doesn't mean we support everything he does or I think he's necessarily the greatest man on the planet. He did take us out of the Paris Climate Conference for a good reason. He's taking us out of these fraudulent so-called free trade agreements, which caused U.S. corporations to shut down industry in the United States. And he is trying to work out an arrangement with China not only reduce our budget deficit, but actually increase our trade with them and increase cooperation with third countries with China's Belt and Road Initiative. He wants to work with Putin so we don't go into another arms race, which will suck up another $750 billion a year in the defense budget. So I think on these things, Trump is doing the right thing. That's why he's under attack. And then you can show the people attacking him are tied to the ones who have a vested interest in continuing wars and in continuing provocations and chaos. So that's, I think, what the real story is of Russiagate.
Well, do you think these neocons that are all surrounded, Trump's surrounded by them, and they're all over Washington, they're running our media, do you think that we will actually be in a situation where we will go to war? I mean, our technology's to the point where war is really disastrous. I mean, it could be more than just destroying countries. We destroyed Syria. We'll destroy whatever country we go into. But it could come home and start destroying us.
Oh, it could. And the last thing that you would ever want would be a nuclear war. But if you look at the language of the people now who are opposing Trump for pulling out of Syria, remember, this is not an abrupt decision he made when he was running for president. He said he wants to end these regime change wars. So he's starting to pull out of a couple of them, Syria and Afghanistan. So what do we see? The neocons ramping up an invasion of Venezuela. They just can't get enough of this. They make their money and their careers by promoting these attacks on countries which are not going with the London-Washington consensus. Same thing happened to Ukraine. If they had their way, I mean, actually, I don't know, Sarah, if you saw this. Did you see George Soros' speech at Davos? What Soros said is that he said, we have to stop China, Russia, and Trump. And Trump. That was the message that Soros gave. Why? And he said, because they oppose his idea of open society. And what is the open society? It's the sewer that our culture is becoming under people, the influence of people like Soros. It's the collapse of industry. It's the free trade agreements. It's the identity politics. It's the idea that you can't have a sovereign nation anymore. If you're for national sovereignty, you must be a neo-Nazi or something. That's Soros's philosophy. And he was explicit in this. And this is what ironically, Soros is known as a liberal or a socialist. He's actually the best buddy of the neoconservatives and the neoliberals. Why? Because he makes on deregulation of the financial system. He became a powerful figure after Nixon took the dollar off gold and ended the Bretton Woods system in 1971. Soros then turned currencies into commodities, and that's how he makes his fortune. Destroying nations. He should be in prison. No one should be listening to this guy.
Well, let's talk about the wall, because that is a good example of Trump trying to build up, protect our country. You know, the rhetoric is over the top and criminal, I think. But what they're not talking about is that Trump's actually trying to get to the source of the problem, whether it's trafficking or the poverty that's in South America, help build up those countries so they don't want to migrate here. And because the poor people don't need to come here to get jobs, and we stop the trafficking and the drugs coming through and all the criminal activity. But the media will only focus on him being a bigot.
This is an extremely important point, because the same thing is true in Europe, where they're saying the Italians, who want to protect their country from huge volumes of immigrants, are racists, when in fact what the Italians are now saying is, since we can't build a wall across the Mediterranean, why don't we help the countries of North Africa develop so people will want to stay there, will be able to stay there. I wrote an article just recently about what Trump is actually doing with Mexico. All we hear about is the wall. He and the Mexican president, López Obrador, agree on two fundamental things. One, that NAFTA was no good for either country. And two, that the best solution to this illegal migration is to build up the internal economies of Mexico, Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. And Trump actually put forward a proposal for $11 billion in aid to Mexico and those three countries for border patrols, border security, and also for investment in infrastructure. And López Obrador, the new president of Mexico, who the U.S. media denounces as a leftist and a wild character, what did he say? He said his dream is that the Mexican economy will be strong enough that no Mexican will have to go to the United States to find a job. So there's a common purpose now between Trump and López Obrador. The wall is a part of it. We have to shut down the drug trafficking. It's the drug trafficking.
No, nobody wants, and the drug trafficking destroys their communities. It destroys ours. But there's been over 800,000 kids that were trafficked through the border just under Obama. That was a congressional or Senate report that I read, that under Obama, 800,000 kids were trafficked from South America. They don't want that.
You know, not only that, but under Obama, there were more people deported back to Mexico than all previous American presidents combined. So all these crocodile tears liberals who are complaining about Trump, where were they when Obama was enforcing laws and sending people back? Now, what Obama did is they'd send them back and they'd come right back over because there was no way to keep them out. So I think the story that we're talking about here, that Trump has a bigger plan, which includes helping Mexico develop, which includes getting rid of the power of the drug traffickers in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, who terrorize the population there, and then extort money from them to bring them in these caravans, mixed with money from George Soros, to the United States. So we can deal with these problems, but you're not going to deal with them through the mainstream media or through, I would say this, both parties. I think the Republican Party has not defended and supported Trump the way it should. Mitch McConnell just pushed through a resolution with Chuck Schumer attacking the idea of withdrawing from Syria. So you have, and it passed 68-23. So you have Republicans working with these existential freaks in the Democratic Party out to destroy the president. So, you know, ultimately, what I have been writing about is that it's up to the American people to become more informed on who's doing this to us. You know, it's not just so-called liberals or Democrats. You can name the names and the institutions through which these people are working. A good example is what's happening in France right now with the Yellow Vest movement. Macron tried to use the phony climate change issue to increase taxes on gasoline in particular. And who protested? Truckers and farmers. And pretty soon they were joined by a broad cross-section of the French population. And Macron is on his way out in France, as are most of the governments in Europe that are buckling under to the European Union. The idea of people going out and demonstrating every Saturday, putting on their yellow vests and saying, we don't want these policies from these arrogant elites, that is the French equivalent of the Trump campaign rallies in 2016. And I hope the president gets the message and goes back out on the road the way he did in the Senate campaign in 2018, goes back on the road and rallies the American people around a pro-growth American agenda. And if he does that, I don't think we have to worry about the Cortezes and the Nancy Pelosis, because the American people have had it with these arrogant elites.
Well, they had it with seeing our everything crumbling around us and watching other countries move ahead of us, because, well, and I think it's even worse because they had it with seeing so many people die of cancer and sicknesses, knowing that there's other things that we can do and other countries are going farther ahead in this than us. There's some serious issues and people are waking up to that and seeing that we're our worst enemy.
You know, on the drug question, you look at the opioid epidemic, which is not just about drug trafficking. It's about loss of hope. It's about seeing cities shut down, factories closed, education being a dead end, college education being unaffordable unless you want to spend the rest of your life living in your parents' cellar paying off a debt. So we've done all these things that are destroying our population. We don't have the mental health capabilities and the centers to protect people from themselves as they go into these downward depressions. The United States is seeing a decrease in life expectancy. This is what happened in Russia after the fall of communism under Yeltsin, when Russia was being looted by the bankers. Just last year, for the first time under Putin's policies, Russia now has more births than deaths. They're on the right track. We're going in the other direction. In Germany, the death rate exceeds the birth rate. That's one of the reasons Merkel was so willing to accept immigrants. We're seeing a collapse of families. You know, you destroy family structure and you make everything in life about what's my immediate pleasure. What can I consume today or this minute that will make me happy? When you don't worry about the future, you don't think about, will we be able to produce next year? That's where we're headed. And that's why the United States is on a downward track, and people know it. You know, the 2016 election showed that people knew what they didn't want. They didn't want a preaching Hillary Clinton, who they suspected was on the take from Wall Street and the defense contractors and so on.
Yeah, but she destroyed Haiti and lied to people. And I mean,
and Libya.
She's a bad guy.
Yeah. So people knew they didn't want that. But and Trump had some good policies that he still hasn't implemented. Like he called for Glass-Steagall, a return to banking regulation that would separate commercial banks from investment banks, which would mean we'd never again bail out speculators. That's why we need Glass-Steagall. And that's for Lyndon LaRouche. That's the first of his four laws. Stop taking away the consequences of risk from people who are risk junkies with your money. So, you know, Trump came out for Glass-Steagall. He came out for major infrastructure.
I want to get back to this family issue that you brought up, you know, how the opioids and all these things that are happening that's destroying the family. And one thing that they're doing with this psychological operation is that they're claiming that coming back to a family is almost not it's not feminist. You know, it's not what women want. It's not, you're not pro women. You're not pro people being able to do what they want. But what they don't understand is having a really healthy family is pro woman. You can do, I have the best partnership marriage that I love my husband, but he supports me 100%. Without him, I don't think I'd be able to do half the stuff that I'm doing. That's what a good marriage is. And people don't understand that a healthy, respectful marriage actually builds up both men and women. And not even, let's say you aren't, you're not heterosexual, you're a homosexual. If you have healthy families, the homosexual person is not going to be rejected by the family because you love that person. You're healthy. You know how to deal with it. And you're just going to be accepting. But you're not going to promote things that aren't true and aren't them like they are today.
Well, you know, on this family question, is it pro-women to see teenage and 20-something children, aged children, dying of heroin epidemic? doses or the various other new drugs that are being introduced. That's not pro-family or pro-woman. You know, the destruction of the human spirit and the sense of the uniqueness of what is a human individual. You know, each human being possesses within them a capacity for creativity. That's what, to Mr. LaRouche and to me, the being created in the image and likeness of God, that's what it means, that we have a capacity to come to understanding some of the mysteries of the universe through scientific discovery and using that to make the world better for everybody. And if a child is given that sense of himself or herself at a young age, they're not going to destroy their minds with drugs. And to do that, you really, today, you have to protect your family. You really, I mean, it's almost as though you want to put up a shield around your family. And of course, you can't do that. But to make the...
You do the best job you can at it, though. Trust me. Go ahead.
I've got three young children, so I know that.
Yes.
You know, and even here in Germany, it's not quite as bad as in the United States, but you have to be concerned. There was just a sign on my children's school the other day, watch out for this predator who's been around battlegrounds. So, you know, this is a universal problem. But, you know, in the United States in the 50s and 60s, before the introduction of drugs and the counterculture, the do your own thing, everything's acceptable, you weren't so worried if your children were out playing in the neighborhood at night or after school. Now you've almost got to have a security guard out there to protect your children. And as a result, children aren't engaging in the same kind of social sport activity that they used to. They're now on television, social networking, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, texting. You have a shift toward this lonely, alienated individual who's a sitting duck for drugs. And I think the idea of a cultural renaissance, of bringing back the principles of what it means to be human, a human being, as opposed to just an animal that has to consume. You know, Sarah, I know that you've been interested in these kinds of issues. The idea of consumer society, which is now acceptable as an economic theory, that the successful society is the one where people can consume the most. That produces obesity, which is unhealthy. It produces the situation where children have more toys than they know what to do with, and they get bored easily. They can't concentrate. We've destroyed the moral fabric of the country with the kind of economic theories that are being promoted in the old Keynesian economic school.
I agree with you 100%. I just had this argument with my daughter on, we're doing the spring break vacation, and everybody, because she's a senior, and everybody's going on this thing, and everybody's buying all these clothes and stuff for spring break, and she expects me to buy her all that. I'm like, well, you have money from Christmas, use that. It's frivolous. You don't need it. So that's what your money for your gifts are. And she was so upset because everybody else is getting all this stuff, and this is the bubble I'm talking about. And you know, trying to teach her, well, then you need to get a job or whatever. When it comes to things that are frivolous that you do not need, you have to do it. You have to figure out how to do it yourself. And in fact, it's wasteful if you already have things. And that's what's missing. And it's not, you know, I also want to say I've always thought of myself as a feminist, you know, always wanting, I hate it when it's another group. I don't, you know, I'm not just a feminist. I'm for anybody that is being put down and not getting to their full potential. And so I want people to understand that when I say that there's a psychological warfare going on, you know, women thinking that I'm not against the notion of what feminism truly was about originally, was to bring up a group that was oppressed and still oppressed in many parts of the world. But anybody that's oppressed, you know, it's not, and we're destroying the family unit. A healthy family unit is pro-woman.
When you talk about identity politics, which is now the Democratic Party is doing this, now the Republicans are trying to figure out how to do it, you start breaking people down into the narrowest possible categories based on sex, religion, race. It's almost tribalism. And you lose a sense of what a nation is. A nation is when people have a common purpose and who elect representatives to represent the interests of the whole nation. Now, in a democratic republic such as the United States, you can debate what's the right thing to do, but that the ultimate goal has to be what's good for the whole, instead of what's good for this small group or that small group. Because if you have a good sense of the nation, you do include everybody. And that was the strength of the United States. I mean, we were a melting pot. We did have people from all over the world come in. And what did they become? They may have called themselves Italian Americans or Jewish Americans or Irish Americans, but they were first and foremost Americans. And now we're losing that. And in fact, if you say we want to have an American economy, you know, you're supposedly now an exceptionalist. You're saying that it's only for white people. And you know, I think we've lost this sense of what the uniqueness of what our
we've lost our minds.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you're right. And well, how about the abortion stuff? I think that's killing the spirit of our country as well. And talk about anti-woman. I mean, I don't know what can be more anti-woman than encouraging them to destroy their baby at the time of birth.
After 9 months, of course. I mean, this is, you know, if you look at the agenda of the leading financial institutions, they're the ones who started in the 1960s promoting the idea that there are too many people, abortion as a solution to the population problem, the population growth, anti-population growth movement, the Club of Rome, the 1980s report, the Trilateral Commission, all of these groups put out reports saying that there are too many people on the planet. And that the question I always ask them is, well, what are you going to do? You want to reduce the world population to 1 billion. Who's going to kill the 6 billion? Who's going to choose the 6 billion that have to go? And, you know, this is something that people have to face. The Green Movement is inherently a genocidal movement because it destroys the institutions of family, the institution of nation states, and the scientific advances that are necessary to sustain life on this planet. You take that away and you end up with a Darwinian jungle in which you're going to see mass slaughter. And we're seeing it now with this New York State bill that was just passed, what they're doing in Virginia on abortion. You know, this is atrocious. And I think some people are beginning to realize that this is not about women choosing what to do. These are things being forced on them in some cases by economic problems.
Or all sorts of other reasons, trafficking or whatever they want to do. They don't want certain groups to reproduce.
Yeah.
It's atrocious. But, you know, China does that too. China does some creepy things with keeping their birth rate down. And they don't have value of life.
Well, they had a one-child policy for a long time, which they now realize was a terrible mistake. Because what it meant is that if a family found out they were going to have a daughter, they aborted it. And so now you've got, I think in China, in the millennial generation, one woman for every 25 men. They've got a really terrible problem. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Additionally, of course, what tends to happen in society is that families make their own choices. In a poor agrarian society, having 8 or 10 kids was somewhat necessary because it enabled you to do more farming. You had a higher infant mortality rate. As the world industrialized, families chose at a certain point to limit the number of children. But that was a choice for them. The Chinese government made that choice for them previously. That's changing now. I think we're seeing a lot of changes in China that are based on the idea that they are working toward developing a large middle class. In fact, there was a report out last week from, I'm not sure who put it out, but it said that China will have 350 million people in the middle class by 2020. That's next year. That's the size of the whole American population. So you can see this growth in a middle class this is a perfect opportunity for us to do more China. And I think President Trump sees that. He's trying to navigate between...
I was going to say the a huge middle class actually brings a lot more ethics and morals to a society as well, because now you have a huge group of healthy individual with the means to stay healthy and to invest in their children, and everybody flourishes.
Well, and what are we seeing in the U.S.? A declining middle class. Even before 2008, that was a problem. But today, wages are stuck at the 1990 level. People can't save money. I think I read somewhere that 60% of Americans couldn't come up with $600 cash for an emergency, that people don't have savings. The pensions, the old pension system where you'd work for 30 or 40 years and then you'd retire and you'd have a pension, that's gone. Pensions have been stolen. Corporations frittered them away. They use them for takeovers and mergers. So everything that we see about the trends in the economy, which we're being told are so great because of consumerism and because of Amazon and Google and this and that, these are devastating to the future. And the small numbers of people who benefit from it, like the Jeff Bezoses, are not thinking about what kind of society they're creating. They just want more and more and more.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I just think they've completely lost their mind. And fueled by, it feels like that they're purposely trying to take down the United States. I feel like there's a war going on, taking us down so that they can invest in something that's better. That's what it seems like.
Well, I'm not sure they have, the people I'm talking about, their strategy is whatever it takes to stay on top. And I think they go back to the Louis the 14th
they're
state.
They're losing their mind.
Yeah. But I think Louis the 14th said it when he said, après nous le déluge, after us, let it all fall apart. We don't care. And I think that's the attitude of some of these people.
Oh.
You know, what was it? I think some...
I would see that.
Well, someone asked George W. Bush, what do you think history is going to think of you? And he said, what do I care? I'll be dead.
That's what I think. They don't care about anything but themselves.
Yeah. And the idea of the immortality of the human soul means nothing. The fact that you live with a higher purpose than just accumulating wealth and experience, that's thrown out the window by this just-in-time consumer society. And, you know, you see the churches falling apart. The churches, a lot of the churches are corrupt. You know, they've accepted the same. You know, I often describe this as a kind of satanic movement, an anti-human movement, which is very seductive. Because the idea that you can have anything you want is something that a lot of people want, even though they know they're not going to get it. And then they're angry and enraged when they don't get it, and they're susceptible to be pitted against each other. And I think that's the strategy that the British have.
It's like being a bunch of spoiled brats. We need to just hunker down and do what's develop our country. Do you see this turning, though? Do you see, you know, with the Yellow Vest movement, they're waking up. Do you see us waking up? And because more people have supported Trump, people aren't sure if Trump's, you know, because he's surrounded by neocons and all sorts of people. You know, people are worried, but yeah. It actually comes down to us, right? Are you seeing more people waking up and saying enough is enough? We don't want these Muellers. We want people who have integrity, and we want to focus on our country. We want family. We want smart development, not smart cities, but smart development with integrity and values.
Sorry, I think there's a global awakening. You look going back to Brexit, then the Trump election, then what happened in Italy, what happened in Austria, what happened in Hungary. What Putin has done in Russia, which is somewhat miraculous given all the problems had come out of communism and that they have with their own oligarchs. There's a rebellion globally against these elites. So I see a potential. And I will say this, as I mentioned earlier, I don't support everything Trump does. I have problems with some of the way he does things also. But I have absolute admiration for his courage and willingness to stand up against the FBI, the CIA, this country, and You know, people sometimes say, well, we don't have any examples of what to do. Well, there's an example. He's risking everything to take on Mueller, to take on the Schumers and the Pelosis and the Paul Ryans and the Clappers and Brennans and Obamas. He's putting everything out there. And a lot of people who say they support him but they're disappointed don't have skin in the game. They're not out in the streets. They're not organizing their friends. They're not talking about it. You know, maybe they try to talk about it at a family reunion and someone in the family says, oh, I don't like Trump. He's got Mnuchin as Treasury Secretary, and this discussion closes. No, you got to fight these things out. You know, in the American Revolution, Hamilton organized a couple of his friends, Madison and John Jay, to write the Federalist Papers. If you read these today, you'll see there's a great deal of wisdom, but they're not so easy to understand. At the time of the American Revolution, people used to have barroom brawls over these conceptions. Is this right? Should we be a republic? Should we be a democracy? What should be the power invested in the state? What about the judiciary? These were fighting issues. That's why we ended up with such a good constitution. And today, most people don't take the time to study the issues and think about them. And they're very quick to complain about the corruption, but they don't stand up and do what's necessary. And the message that I've been taking out for 40 years in my association with Lyndon LaRouche is, if you don't like the choices you're given, create choices. History is full of examples of small movements changing big countries. And we could do that today. We have a president who wants to do it. We have a population that wants to do it. We've got a lot of corrupt morons in the Congress in both parties, but they still have to come before the people, at least in the House, every 2 years. And if we're not sleeping, if we're doing our job, we'll confront these guys when they're out campaigning. And maybe we'll choose some other candidates who represent American interests. And that's how you make a revolution.
Absolutely. I appreciate this talk so much. Thank you, because I think that you bring solutions to the table. There is a lot of dire, and it's killing our spirit, but the only way to reclaim our spirit is to go out there and make a difference and to create solutions.
Well, and I'd like to offer to your listeners, if they want to get those articles that I'm writing, if they send me an email, I'll send you the link to my blog, and I'm writing an article every week. So my email is harleysch@gmail.com. So it's Harley like the motorcycle, SCH at Gmail. And I do respond to my emails.
Okay, and I got to tell people, your stuff is amazing. It's really, really well researched and it's great. I was really impressed when, you know, I spent more time. I've heard you on SGT Report and other places. I'm like, he's really great. And then I went and I started really reading your blog. I highly recommend your work to people. It's really great.
Well, thank you. And I'm really happy we had the opportunity to have this discussion.
Yeah, thank you so much. You have a great day and you're in Germany, so it's nighttime. So my day's just starting and yours is coming to an end.
Yeah, my kids just got home, so I've got to go down and see what mischief they're up.
So, okay. Well, have a great day. Thank you so much.
Thank you.